Welcome to the Callaway Golf Podcast, part of the Callaway Podcast Network. Here's your host, Jeff Newbarth.
Welcome to the Callaway Golf Podcast, yet another quarantine edition. But this is our first international quarantine edition. We're going to test the internet, and we're going to be joined by Ryder Cup captain, victorious Ryder Cup captain, Tomas Bjorn, who I'm shocked is not holding the trophy kind of currently, and by one of the players who was the star, one of the stars on that team, Francesco Molinari, who I believe has the trophy within view. Do you mind just turning and just give us a view? Because I think it's one, the first thing you have to do is when we have Ryder Cup heroes, we got to see it. There it is.
There you go. Right there.
Tomas, is yours close by, or do you have it like in kind of a trophy case, lock and key?
No, the real one is, I think Podrick is parading that around the world. So I was quite happy to give it to him, and he can carry that round for a couple of years.
All right. Well, we're going to be live with you guys on Facebook, on YouTube, on Twitter, Periscope. We want to hear your questions for these great champions, and we will be taking all your questions, and Jen, Matt, Josh behind the scenes will be feeding to me, and we'll get all these things answered. But I want to start off with something that's sort of been topical, and I'll start with you first, Tomas. You know, there's been all this talk about, are they going to play the Ryder Cup? Are they not going to play the Ryder Cup? I don't want to get into the speculation of that because we don't know. But if they did do a Ryder Cup without fans, how do you think that would go down? Maybe for Europe playing in the US, it wouldn't be the worst thing, but what do you think about it?
No, I think it's I just don't think that's a viable thing to do. I think the Ryder Cup is the fans, and no matter if it's in America, if it's in Europe, anybody that's played in a Ryder Cup, anybody that's been to a Ryder Cup, it really is all about the fans. And if there's a golf tournament in the world, that's the fans' golf tournament. It's the Ryder Cup. So that would be a difficult thing to do, I think. I think it's right that the PGA of America and the European Tour are pursuing all the ideas and avenues and see what they can do. I think we're all in a world of uncertainty right now, and also financial uncertainty. There's a lot of things that goes into making events like this happen. So, you know, that they have to look at it, and they're in no rush. But as a player, as a former captain, I would say it's really a difficult thing to see without fans. I can't see players running around on greens and jumping up and down, and when there's nobody around. You know, you feed off the fans, you feed off the people that come and watch, and that atmosphere. And just seems a difficult thing to play that event without any fans. Well, on the other hand, I think you can play other golf events without fans and get going again. You know, it would be good for TV. It'll be good for people at home to be able to watch golf on TV. But the Ryder Cup is all about the atmosphere.
Yeah, I should mention you guys are both over in London right now, though. You guys are neighbors, but you can't go hang out with each other because London's under lockdown. Francesco, for you, as someone who, you know, the fans probably wouldn't be supporting you this year in Whistling Straits. What would that be like, you think, if they said, hey, you can go out and play the U.S. and you guys can be in your uniforms and have opening ceremonies and no one will be there? What would that be like?
Yeah, I agree with Tomas. It wouldn't be a Ryder Cup, to be honest. You know, it's the fans has such a big role in that tournament specifically that I really struggle to picture, you know, a Ryder Cup on an empty golf course with just 24 players going around and playing matches. I don't know. I understand there's a financial, I guess, and, you know, economical side to it, and the people in charge need to look at all those things. But from a player's perspective, even, you know, someone like me, like you said, that would have played away from home, I guess, this time, you're looking forward to seeing the crowds, even if they're rooting against you. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's still part of the magic of the Ryder Cup. So we see what they decide to do. You know, I'm sure no matter what, obviously, All the players, we will do their best to be there and to make the teams. But let's hope we don't get to that.
See, I thought you're wearing the Michael Jordan shirt, not just because of the great documentary that came out this week, but I think you're kind of kissing up to the U.S. fans a little bit, because Chicago's not that far from Milwaukee. And if you're sporting Jordan stuff, you know, maybe
you got me.
Maybe you're just trying to butter them up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it would be a bit too early, and they probably forget by then about my Jordan t-shirt. I don't think that would change too many opinions.
All right. Tomas, I want to ask you this one. As someone who has experienced being the captain, what would it potentially be like if there aren't enough events really to have qualifications, like picking 12 players, or what's your stance on how they would have to do qualifications for a team, being someone who had the task of putting a team together?
Yeah, that's going to be a difficult thing to do. You know, I think I certainly wouldn't want to be captain having to pick 12 players. I think that's a big task. And also, people haven't played enough golf really over the summer to judge what kind of form they're in. And you end up maybe picking people on past experiences and what they've done in the past. But then we also got to look at the bigger picture, I guess, you know, in the way of, is it that relevant? You know, it's a golf match. It's an important golf match, but it is a golf match, you know, and in the way the world looks right now, let's go and play with whoever's going to play and try and make the best of that. Like we have to do with golf and any other sport when we eventually get going. Let's just make the best of it and try and get going. And, you know, I always look at it, and without getting too political about it, you know, I always look at it in a way of saying that it's not really about the golf results right now. It's not really about who wins football matches or who wins golf tournaments. It's about getting the ecosystem of sport going again. You know, it's like getting old people working again and try and get the world up and rolling. You know, that's kind of, and having big sporting events, you know, it's about all the caddies and all of the manufacturers and all the journalists and TV people that work in our businesses, that get them back into work. And that's the important thing. Who wins the golf tournaments and sport events is really irrelevant right now. Let's just get going. And that goes with the Ryder Cup. You know, I look at it and go, yeah, so if it's going to be, even if it was the same two teams as last time, you know, it'll still be great fun to watch. And the golf might be a little bit more rusty than it is normally, but it'll still be good fun to watch.
Yeah, well, that brings us, so we have some questions. Let's start with Lee Perch. I'll start with you, Francesco. Do you think it's easy to jump straight back into high-level competitive golf given this lengthy break? Now, you have a wonderful practice facility in your living room right there, so I'm not concerned about you. But for those who don't have such an in-depth, beautiful, state-of-the-art facility, how do you think they're going to cope?
High-tech, real high-tech. I don't know. Yeah, that's a huge question mark for all of us. But a bit like Tomas was saying, you know, we whenever we get to play again, we'll be so happy to play that at least for a few holes, we won't get mad if we hit bad shots. Then I'm sure we'll be back to swearing and wishing we never play golf. But no, I don't know. It's a huge question mark. I think it would take some time for sure, a few weeks. You know, hitting shots in a net is one thing, but then hitting, you know, playing golf on a golf course is a completely other thing. So maybe guys who you know, just depending on where they live, have been able to play golf during these weeks, months, will have a slight advantage for the first few weeks.
See, I've been hitting in a net almost daily, so I'm ready. I just don't have ability. That's what's gonna hurt me is the lack of ability. Tomas, for you, it's kind of same question. What do you think about the layoff, and particularly those of you who are, you know, sort of city bound? You know, it's different. You know, we had Kevin Kisner on the podcast last week, and his house is on the back end of a driving range, and basically he's been living at the driving range. But for players who haven't been able to do that, how do you think it's going to impact them, and how long do you think it's going to take to kind of get their games back in order?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It is obviously tough to be able to get going again. But you know, most guys will just, you know, you're looking so much forward to practicing, and that's not always the case either. So I guess when once you get going, you'll be on the range for hours and hours and getting into it. And guys in general are quite good at picking it up sooner than you think. You know, I grew up in Scandinavia and living in a country where you couldn't play golf in the winter. You know, every time spring came around, you hadn't played golf for 4 or 5 months, and you get on a driving range, you hit a lot of balls, and you pick it up quite quickly, and then you get out there. I think your mind will be fresh. So, and that's a big part of it as well, that your mind is fresh and you're wanting to play and you're enjoying playing. So I don't think it'll take long. I mean, the first few weeks there'll be a few guys shooting numbers that we're not used to seeing them shoot, but you know, that's the same as coming off big injuries or long layoffs to injury, and people seem to pick up that quite quickly after injuries. So I don't think it'll take too long. It's just getting out there and being able to practice.
Yeah, for worldwide players like yourselves, you guys never get a break, because it's whether you're playing on the PGA Tour, then you know, the European Tour, then you know, there's events all over the world and obligations all over the world. So you're right, the mental part. All right, we have another question from Bob Holden. Bob needs a putting tip. My putting tip is to go get a triple track number 10, because you'll make everything with it. But I'll defer to the experts here. Thomas, why don't you start? What would a putting tip be? Maybe something you can work on at home for Bob while he's kind of quarantined.
Yeah, there's obviously a lot of exercises you can find on online and with a lot of good coaches. The one thing that I tend to do I did when I was a kid, when I couldn't get outside, it was that I tried to actually do things where I do a lot of chipping with one hand, and I do a lot of putting with one hand, and try and keeping my angles in my wrists. So you kind of learn to keep your wrists still, so that there's no excess movement in your hands. So try and stand there and actually feel the putter with one hand and try and not make the wrist move too much. The putter gets very heavy when you put it in one hand and practice with that arm. So try and hold the putter in one hand and not make the wrist break down at all. That actually teaches the hands to work correctly.
All right, I'm going to do this right now. Francesco, you have a little putting facility right there.
I was going to grab my putter too, yeah.
Yeah, do it. Let's go. I mean, how can you not do that, right? When someone says to hold it with one hand, so just kind of work on the motion and kind of keep it like that. I feel like my putter is getting better already.
That's good.
The bar was really low. Exactly, the bar was really low. All right, Francesco, what about you? What's a putting tip? We actually just released one on odysseygolf.com that we shot at the Players kind of right before this whole thing started, where you showed people how to use triple track. What are you working on in the home facility right now?
Yeah, well, obviously you're limited, but you know, if you have a rug or a putting mat like I have just behind here, what I tend to do is tend to work on tempo. Obviously, you know, there's no hole, but you can see how far the balls are rolling out. A good exercise if you have 10, 15 feet, you know, where you can roll a ball is maybe close your eyes, use two or three balls and try to hit the two or three putts the same distance, controlling your speed and your tempo. But like Thomas was saying, you know, it's just trying to find ways really to keep the brain engaged, I guess. You know, it's been quite boring for everyone not getting out, but yeah, try to make the most of it.
Well, one thing we've been doing on odysseygolf.com, I don't know if you guys saw this, but we put out the first of what's going to be a series of kind of called home course. We're inviting people to make their own home putting golf course. And the first one was Under the Bridge, which was not just a tribute to the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but an idea where you had to take a coffee table, or some people took a pool table or whatever, and you just kind of did a putt at your house that went under the bridge, under a table or something. I think those are things that potentially, you know, when you're in the Ryder Cup or in a major, maybe that'll help you if you practice the under the bridge. But I don't know which one we're going to do this week. We're working on a couple other ideas, but odysseygolf.com, check it out. And I'd love you guys to participate. Just make a little video of your under the bridge putt and post it. Use the hashtag home course. All right, we got a couple more questions. This one's from one of my favorite guests who tends to email the show a lot, Josh. Wants to know, for both tours, your favorite stop on the PGA Tour and then your favorite stop on the European Tour. Tomas, let me start with you with PGA Tour first.
I always thought the Players' Championship was my favorite stop. The golf course I thought was always unbelievable. It's a great week. It's that was always the one that's that I felt really. And back in the day, and now it's back in that day, it was also the lead into the Masters, which was kind of, you felt like the golf season was starting really, and you had the Players, and then you had you'd go up to Atlanta and play Bell South, and then head down to Augusta. It was kind of the start. You really felt like that was the start of the season. So that was a cool place for me. In Europe, I mean, we move around a lot, and there's, I still think that when we go and play our Dunhill Links, I still think that that's probably my favorite week of the year. Go and play those great Links golf courses up there in October when you can get all sorts of weather. But it really is a fantastic week for everyone. So I enjoy that week very much.
Yeah, I love watching that one back here. Francesco, for you, you want to start with in the United States and then favorite stop in Europe after that?
Yeah, I would say United States. I'm honestly more of a West Coast guy, so I was thinking probably Torrey Pines.
That's like a mile. I literally can open the window and go about a mile that way, and we could be there.
Lucky you. Yeah, it's a great course and, you know, a beautiful spot. It's just a week that I enjoy every year, and it's kind of really the start of my season, or, you know, it has been the last few years. So it's always a nice week to go back and see everyone. And in Europe, I'm divided really between Paris, the Golf National, where we play the Ryder Cup. Obviously, we played the French Open there many, many years. And Wentworth, just not far from here, you know, just outside London. I guess it's our Players' Championship, you know, back here in Europe. Again, beautiful course, great crowds every year, and one of the events really with most tradition and history here in Europe.
All right. Obviously, this time of year, normally, as you both mentioned, Augusta, that's kind of what would normally be on our mind. But now we're going to do Augusta in the fall. And our buddy Josh would also like to know, start with you, Francesco, what do you think about a Masters in the fall? What's that going to be like?
It'd be interesting. You would expect, I guess, the weather to be different, a bit cooler. We'll see if, you know, how it will look like. It might be a few more orange leaves, but they have a few tricks up their sleeves there. So they might manage to get it perfectly green even in November somehow. But no, we're all looking forward to that. It's one of those tournaments that you would play really any time in the year, even in January under the snow. So it'll be interesting to see how different it will play, but we will enjoy that week, no matter what, really.
I think they'll have a person assigned to every leaf. And if that leaf falls, that person's job is to remove the leaf where nobody sees. So I think that's probably what they're going to do. Thomas, what do you think about a Masters in November? That's something like we've never seen before.
Yeah, but I kind of knowing Augusta National, I'm sure he won't feel much difference. They'll make it happen and they'll make it perfect. That's what they always do, no matter what obstacles are in their way. They always make that golf course perfect, and they'll make. I mean, I've been fortunate to play golf there in October and once, and you know, it's still great then, and it was just, it would be another Masters. It would just be great. Once you're through those gates, everything is perfect and pristine, and they'll put on a fantastic show like they always do.
Yeah, the only thing is, though, if you win, you get the green jacket. You only get to keep it till April. You know, you don't get that extra. You kind of lose half of your time. Maybe they'll let you take it an extra couple months. I mean, I guess you're a champion for life, so it's probably the benefit outweighs the little downside, but.
Do you think you care too much about that?
So I think that probably wouldn't be take first. It. See, that's the stuff that I think about. All right, Neil Parmeter wants to know, is Whistling Straits, the Ryder Cup course, an advantage or disadvantage for Team Europe? He asked that on Facebook. Thomas, what do you think? Is Whistling Straits advantage or disadvantage?
I don't think it's, if you're going to find a golf course in America, or find golf courses in America, we'd say, well, this sets up pretty decent for Europe. Whistling Straits would definitely be on that list. there's not so much you can do with that golf course to you know, it's sitting there in the dunes. It's you can't really change it too much. So, and I think also there's a golf course that most of the team that's going to be there on have played before. And I think that's a big thing for players, that they come to a golf course that they've been on before and they know where everything is and how to play it. So, you know, the big thing in the Ryder Cup is still the crowds. It's still that, you know, that kind of feeling. If you get the crowds against you, it's tough. It can be an extreme tough thing to overcome. The golf courses, and I said that in Paris as well. You know, there's a lot of talk about the golf course, but when you take 24 of the best golfers in the world, you can put them on any golf course, and they should be able to navigate their way around that. And so I don't think the golf courses are that big an issue as it also used to be. These guys play together. You know, they play the same tournaments and the same tours. When you go back in the 80s and the 90s, you know, it was two completely separate tours. It was completely different to play golf in Europe as it was than in America. And now those guys play on the same tour. You know, all the 12 European players play probably the majority of their golf in America now, so they won't be too surprised of what they're going to find in Whistling Straits.
Yeah, Francesco, thoughts on Whistling Straits?
Yeah, we've been there before, you know, for USPGAs. I think I've played twice there. Beautiful course. Again, we played it in August. I guess in September, October will be slightly different. I mean, I guess, you know, how you take advantage of the golf course, it's really in the setup. And like Thomas was saying, Whistling Straits, you know, there's lots of bunkers. I don't think, you know, the rough makes that much of a difference. So it would play just as it's, you know, supposed to play, I guess. But yeah, we've seen Martin Kaymer obviously winning the USPGA. So it's a course where European players have done well before. So not probably the course that would give most of the advantage to the US.
All right. We have lots of questions coming in online. We'll try to rapid fire through these. Francesco, I'll ask you first, this is from Jake, maybe Jake from State Farm. Outside of golf, what sport are you most excited to see start back up?
All sports. I'm a big soccer fan.
I asked you to pick one.
Yeah, soccer, football, I should say, before I get kicked out of the UK.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You're wearing the Michael Jordan shirt. Next thing you know, you're going to be playing for the US Ryder Cup team. You keep that up. Tomas, what about
Not
you?
Quite.
What sport are you most excited other than golf to see?
I'm with Francesco, football, soccer.
Thomas's team was going to win the league after 20, how many years?
30 years of pain.
30. And now it's going to be cancelled. Unfortunately, they'll have to start over again.
I'm assuming we're talking about the Premier League.
Yeah, this is a typical West Ham fan that might go down, be relegated. They are hoping it's going to get cancelled.
Well, fun fact: I recently, a couple of years ago, started supporting the Mighty Canaries of Norwich City. So I'm hoping they keep the season extended because that keeps us in the Premier League for at least another couple of weeks before we get sent back down.
You and Francesco should go for a drink and talk about that.
We're on the same boat, yeah.
Yeah, well, I would love to do that because that means I'd be out of my house. All right, next one. What is more nerve-wracking? This is from Tyler. First time being in contention at a major or first Ryder Cup experience? Nerves. Tomas, let me let you start with that.
Ryder Cup. Ryder Cup is, well, I always, you know, I've been in contention in major championships coming down the stretch on Sunday. Francesco's won a major championship. So, but I think the way I always describe it is the Ryder Cup is the back nine on Sunday being in contention, but it starts on Friday morning. That's how you feel the whole week. Where when you really get in there in a major championship, yeah, you get nervous and you get right up there. But it is really for that back nine on Sunday when it starts. So the Ryder Cup, it's the same kind of feeling, but the Ryder Cup is just for 3 days where you feel like that.
All right. Francesco, same question to you. You agree?
Yeah, completely, yeah. Ryder Cup, no doubts, really. I don't know exactly what it is. I guess that you're playing, you know, not only for yourself, but for your captain, for your teammates, for everyone else. And yeah, just, I don't think it compares, to be honest.
All right. Next one is from Lippard Tom 2, also known as Tom. Upon resumption of play, are you guys more confident in your physical or mental game? So, Francesco, what do you think is going to be first to kind of come back and get back to where you were, say, in March, mental or physical? Or none of the above? Or all of the above?
Depends how much I'm going to eat from now until the end of the, of the lockdown.
All right, so tell me about that. What's the food situation been like?
Anything that I can find in the house, basically. That's been the diet. Jokes aside, I think the, you know, mentally we're definitely going to be fresh, obviously, coming out of the gates after a long break and really, you know, raring to go and wanting to get out there. So I think the mental side will probably be quicker than the physical side. That might take a little longer just to get back into swinging a club and you know, playing golf.
All right, Thomas, have you broken anything in the house trying to get some swings going on, or are you focusing more on the mental game?
Yeah, I think, well, I mean, I guess the one thing that you can work on is the mental side. I also think that in this kind of situation, but also think that I think mental side of golf is maybe not taking it as serious. And I think once we get out the other side of this, it'll be a while before we take everything too serious when it comes to the sport again. We'll just might be a little bit more relaxed about everything, and that'll set you up well to play well. There's going to be some rusty golf, though, man. I don't know. There's going to be a few things to deal with there.
All right, Francesco, there's there's kind of a union of people who do interviews with golfers, and it's required that if you have an Open champion in the room, you have to ask them about, was the Open Championship final round the most pressure you've ever felt in an event? If I don't ask that, I lose my card. I can't do this anymore. So there's your obligatory. Was it the most pressure?
Not if we include the Ryder Cup, no. I was watching the other day, actually, here in the UK, they were showing Medina, the Ryder Cup at Medina, and it just brought back memory of being last out against Tiger, and they were not nice memories. Nice memories in the end, but not throughout the match.
So have you been watching some of the old golf that's been on?
I watched that because it was on Sunday, and I don't think I watched, you know, the full thing ever since, because usually we don't get a chance. And so I watched that, and my heart was just racing throughout the show, and incredible day, really. Yeah, that's definitely the most pressure I ever felt on a golf course. That's the one day, the one situation.
All right, and Thomas, how many times have you watched the Ryder Cup where you were victorious since the start? Are you just have it on a loop, just watching it over and over and over and over, or have you given it a break for a couple of days?
No, I haven't. I watched it right like 2 weeks after the Ryder Cup. I watched it all just to kind of get my mind around which order everything happened in, and you know, through TV you get an overall view much better than you do when you're on site. So I wanted to watch it, and then I actually did a watch along with one of our Sky Sports presenters the other day. So I watched the Sunday singles again, which was quite interesting. I there's certain things that you forget, but no, it's not something that I sit down and watch too much.
See, I would just have another TV and just always have it on. Maybe it's not your main thing, but every now and then you kind of look over and see it. All right, we had a question from Mark on YouTube. I'll start with you, Thomas, here. Tips to make it to the PGA, I'm assuming pro golf, not an instructor, as a young teenage golfer. And he appreciates you giving him an answer. I would say first is talent. After talent, though, what are some of the things that are going to make a difference?
Well, I think what I see when young players come out is that the guys that play a lot of golf, like out on a golf course and testing themselves on a golf course and get out there, that's the one thing that a lot of kids lose today. They tend to be standing on driving ranges, hitting a lot of golf balls, and think that's the solution to become a successful golfer. I think when you talk to a lot of guys that have been successful in their careers, they find a way of playing golf all the time and being out on the golf course. And then yeah, later in life, you get down to knuckling down and hitting the balls and do the technical bit. But when you're a kid, you've got to be out there and play golf courses and learn to play the game. There's too many one-dimensional golfers in the world that don't make it because they don't understand how the game affects them. They can go out and play on a calm day and play that one-dimensional game. But golf is not like that. When you've got to make it as a professional, you've got different golf courses, you've got different conditions, you've got different kinds of pressures. So you've got to learn how to play the game in different ways. Some of the greatest golfers will always say that what they had like a go-to shot when they got under pressure. They had a shot that they could fall back on all the time and hit. And that was never a pretty golf shot, but it was always a shot that they could take out of the bag and use when they felt extreme pressure. And you don't really find that on the range. You find that on the golf course when you feel like, here's a shot that I don't feel comfortable, that I can't hit, but I can go to this shot and I can make it work. It's a shot that works for you. It's not a great golf shot, but it's a shot that works for you. That was always the thing that admired me the most by Tiger. I always felt like when you played with him and when he was at his best, when he wasn't playing his best, he always had a shot that he could pull out and that put him in a position where he could manage his golf from. And that enabled him to shoot scores when he wasn't playing his best. And then he would go to the range and sort it out. And then when he played his best, it was just phenomenal. But learning on the golf course to find a way of playing when you're not playing your greatest, that sets you up for a good career.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, of all the accomplishments that Tiger has, and there's so many, we could probably spend the next hour listening to that, that made cut streak was just so impressive because there were so many weeks where he had 2 days and he didn't have it, and he somehow managed to get himself in position and then let his mind kind of will him to make that cut. Francesco, kind of same question. What advice do you have to a young teenage golfer besides having the practice facility of champions that you have there? What would you encourage them to do?
Thomas's advice was great. I remember when I was maybe 15, 16, I kind of started, you know, getting a bit more serious about golf, and I just started like kind of playing the local competition in my town every weekend. And, you know, it was really not very good golfers, but you know, it was just the fact of being out on the course playing 18 holes Saturday and Sunday every weekend and learning to put a score together, really. That's definitely an aspect of the game that you need to learn, I think, when you're young, and it's one of the biggest keys to being a successful professional. So that's the number one advice, no doubt.
Nice. Well, speaking of advice for those who are trying to turn pro, we have a cool documentary. Shout out to Sean Gilroy and Cliff Ensley on our team who put it together. Shantaro Bond, who was an All-American at UNLV, actually qualified for the U.S. Open a couple years back ago at Shinnecock. We spent some time with him kind of on his journey. He was actually getting ready for PGA Tour China Q School when we sat down with him in February, and that was one of the first events canceled due to the coronavirus. So we have a cool documentary. It's about 9 or 10 minutes. It'll go out later today on CatalayGolf.com. But for that question mark that might talk to you, what does a young golfer have to do to get ready? You can check it out kind of in Shintaro's words. Some other content you're going to want to check out: the Girls in Golf podcast. Lex and Sarah have Carlota Shinanda and Georgia Hall on tomorrow. So that should be a pretty awesome conversation. And then Nate and Dave on the Fitting Room had quarantine mailbag questions, which was pretty cool. They answered a bunch of questions, and they have Dylan Fratelli next week, who has the distinction, like Francesco, of playing a lot of triple track in his bag. So clearly, bright, smart, talented individuals use triple track. So you gotta want to check that one out, right?
One of the favorite things in my bag, yeah, for sure.
Exactly. All right. And I expect to see your guys' home course challenge video. Last question I have for you, and this is for Thomas. Nick McAnally is my new boss. We only have 3 to 4 hours here. Can you give me some dirt on him? And can you give me some advice for dealing with, he makes me call him Sir Nick. Is that what he had you guys call him? Or is that just something he's doing to me?
There's only one Sir Nick, and he commentates on TV. That's not Nick McAnally, I can tell you that.
But any advice for dealing with him? You know, it's always nerve-wracking when you have a new boss come in town.
He's not that frightening. You gotta make fun of him. He takes it pretty well. He's okay, easy to make fun of as well.
I did hear that most of you in Europe were happy to get rid of him, though. So we are happy to have him over here as well. But I do know he has a great relationship with you in particular and with a lot of our Callaway staffers overseas. So it's always good to. I can't wait till we can all get together, because I'm certain there's a couple good laughs happening then.
Definitely.
All right. Well, Thomas, Francesco, thank you guys so much for taking some time. I do love the Air Jordan shirt. If you haven't seen the Last Dance documentary, just public service announcement, go watch it. It's on every channel, it seems, right now. Thank you guys so much for being a part of the Callaway Golf Podcast. We are going to be back on Thursday. We have Olin Brown, who's going to be joining us. Olin's going to be joining us from South Florida. Lots to talk with him about. And if you didn't listen to our past episodes, we had Stenson, Furyk, Willett, and Leishman on together. We had Kevin Kisner on. Plenty of them. Go check them out on the Callaway Golf Podcast. Until Thursday, have a great rest of the week. Stay safe, everyone, and we will see you Thursday.